This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for today for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
A recent survey shows that mobile communications like texts and phone calls can play a huge role in relationship satisfaction, even for couples that live close to one another.
There's been research already on the role of mobile technology for long-distance relationships. Makes sense, but what about the rest of us?
It turns out that high-quality communication leads to people reporting higher satisfaction in their relationships, and there are a few reasons for that.
Joining us now to tell us more about her research is Catalina Toma, Assistant Professor of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. Catalina, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So give us the basics. What did you learn? These are people, you know, in proximity. They're dating in the same town or maybe a couple in the same place. What do we know about how their smartphones and other technologies helping them get along?
As you mentioned earlier, Rob, there's a lot of research on the use of mobile technology within long-distance relationships because those relationships depend for their existence almost on this technology. But we know very little about how much co-located couples use this technology and to what effects. So the goal of our study was twofold. First, we were interested in finding out how much dating couples use technology to stay in touch with one another when they're co-located. And secondly, to what extent this usage affects their relationship quality. And it's important to note that in this study, we simply focused on college-age dating couples, so young folks in dating relationships, not marital or longer-term relationships.
And so how did people who responded to your survey determine if their communication was high quality, or how did you determine if it was high quality?
Luckily, as psychologists, we have scales for those things. We administered a scale asking participants how satisfied and they found their mobile communication to be, how rewarding they found their interactions, and so on and so forth. We also, I should say, measured their quantity of communication. We were interested in both of these indices, quantity and quality of communication, using a variety of media just to ascertain what the patterns are. And we found that mobile communication, so texting first and foremost, and the phone, so voice calling, were by far the most widely used media. Everything else was not so used. On average, our couples used about three distinct media to stay in touch with their partners, despite being geographically co-located, as I mentioned earlier.
I could see an argument either way here. I could see, talking in person is the best way to go. All this other stuff is like, it's like a barrier between you. It's going to be bad communication. Get together more, put away the phones. Or I could see any communication is better. And so the more you're in touch with each other in whatever medium, the better things are. So what did you find?
I would definitely reject the first perspective,
okay.
The idea that mediated communication is in some ways inferior to face-to-face communication.
Well, a little bit.
Or that, not necessarily, because in many situations you're not able to opt for face-to-face communication, even if you would want to. So mobile communication presents an option to supplement your face-to-face interaction that you wouldn't have otherwise. Think about being separated by work or school commitments for the majority of the time. If you didn't have the phone or texting, you might not be in touch with your partner at all. That's one argument. The other is that there's a lot of research showing that when it comes to communication, less is more. So what we call reduced cue media, so media that obstruct nonverbal cues like texting and to a lesser degree the phone, present advantages. When we don't have these nonverbal cues, when we don't have full information about what our partner is up to, how they're maybe gesticulating or what their facial expressiveness is, we have a lot of space to imagine, to project things, and that's not necessarily bad. In fact, in our work, we're finding that the usage of these technology is correlated with partner idealization. So it's allowing us to form an idealized, embellished version of our partner that maybe we wouldn't be able to form face-to-face. Mm. And guess what? Idealization actually is a positive thing in relationships in terms of boosting relational satisfaction. If we didn't think our partner was more special or more wonderful than they probably actually are, we wouldn't be quite so satisfied in our relationships.
So you're saying, I think, that we can basically project onto that text or that that link that our partner shared on our Facebook page with us, that we can see that in the best possible light that makes us feel good about ourselves by feeling good about how they feel about us.
Exactly right. So it's a motivated distortion. We see what we want to see, and we want to see positive things in our relationships.
Now, in the workplace, sometimes people worry that, that email, unless you put the smiley face in or whatever, am I supposed to read this as friendly or sarcastic or curt? But I guess in a relationship, people are putting, they're not worried about that stuff. They're reading in the best possible light, so maybe it's not doing potential damage.
Yes, people do read in the direction of their expectations, and within these relationships, we would imagine those expectations to be positive, but also there's a track record of communication, so you kind of know what to expect. You kind of know how to interpret a partner's more idiosyncratic expressions, maybe. But you're right, there's research showing that things like sarcasm don't translate quite so well in reduced cue environments, because facial expressiveness and gestures and the like are actually important for conveying sarcasm. And when you lose those, you might not be able to convey it quite so successfully.
It would also seem like when you're getting something from your partner, someone who you have spent a lot of time, presumably, in person, you have more context anyway. You're not kind of going blind like you might be with someone who works three departments away from you.
Absolutely right.
So your survey specifically looked at college students. So some of the data might be a little skewed by that demographic. But in that study, what were the most popular ways of communicating?
By far, the most popular way of communicating was texting. Almost 100% of our sample used texting to stay in touch with their partner, and they did so to a substantial degree, about 60 minutes a day, they estimated. And granted, it's kind of hard to estimate how much you text, but our participants estimate about an hour a day. It was followed by the phone, with maybe 3/4 of our participants using it for about half an hour a day on average. Everything else was much less frequently used. I think instant messenger was used by about half of our sample, and everything else much less so. So texting is winning by a long shot.
Now that's with, again, college-age students. Would you anticipate something different with different age groups?
Yes, there's one other study that's looked into the topic and also addressed marital relationships. We're finding texting to be also quite popular, but email was also much more popular with older folks, suggesting that ingrained patterns of use matter. So if you're maybe growing up or being really used to email or instant messenger, some of the older new media, right? You may be using those more for your communication, but if you're growing up with texting, that's quite prevalent.
Talking to Catalina Toma, communications arts professor at UW-Madison, about relationships and our smartphones, our high-tech mobile communications. They are good, is the short version. Using texting and messaging seems to boost how much couples appreciate one another. Now, I don't know if we are knowing what is being texted here, because 60 minutes a day, that's more than pick up some milk. Hopefully it's more than I love you more, no, I love you more. Like, do we have a sense of what is going on? Are these just like conversations?
That's a fantastic question, and we really, really badly wanted to investigate the content of communication, but we were unable
privacy,
to do so.
Yeah,
because of private issues, we weren't allowed to collect that data. But we could imagine there's a lot of coordination of tasks, maybe, but also displays of affection and emotional communication as well.
I have to say, texting, I will share things by texting that would never rise to the level of making a phone call or remembering long enough until I get home. So I feel like in some ways, texting or those other really instantaneous communications allow more of kind of a glimpse into my everyday life when I'm away from home.
That's such a good point. And texting has many advantages in that it's very low in cost to produce, right? You can text right away. You don't have to think very deeply about it. It doesn't take long to write out your message. It's also not intrusive, right? You're not interrupting your partner's activities and forcing them to respond in the same way that a phone call would. Responding also is lowering costs and tends to happen really quickly. Research shows that many texts are answered within an hour or so. And very often they allow for instantaneous communication, even though that's not mandatory, but people opt to respond really quickly.
And we surveyed some of our colleagues here at WPR, a little older than the demographic you were surveying, Catalina. But Judith, different Judith, said she's married to an avid tweeter, and she says, we're never at a loss for a conversation starter. Like, I saw you had a Reuben sandwich for lunch today. But that, I hadn't thought of it that way. It's not just we're texting or we're seeing what each other's doing on Facebook and Twitter, but that's like an instant starting point for when you're together later. So these can feed off of each other.
That's such an interesting insight, and we'd love to do some research on that in the future. People do tend to capture everyday moments on Twitter or Facebook and to think about them and maybe process them in a way that they wouldn't have otherwise. Maybe they would have been forgotten little moments, but because they're posted on social media, they can be conversation starters. And nowadays, people do not feel creepy or weird for following what their friends and family members post on social media. And those arise as subjects of conversation in everyday life quite easily.
So you did actually look at how couples present themselves on Facebook, and it can relate to the length of a relationship. What did you find there?
Oh, yeah, that's a different study that was really nice, I think. In that study, we were interested in the extent to which couples' self-presentation as a couple on Facebook was related perhaps to the longevity of their relationship. And again, we studied dating couples in college. And we found that the more couples presented themselves as such, so to the extent to which they listed themselves in a relationship and posted joint photographs and wrote on each other's wall, the more committed they felt to their partner. And after 6 months, we actually tracked them longitudinally over time, the more likely they were to stay together with their partner.
So it's another, I mean, there's, you know, promise rings they used to have, an engagement and marriage. And this is a level of commitment, not a necessarily binding one, but a significant one you found.
Yes, yes. Facebook, becoming Facebook official is nowadays an important relational step, an important thing to be negotiated amongst couples. And it's psychologically significant because it does demonstrate public commitment. Facebook is quite a public medium. Our couples had many friends in common. I think we're talking about hundreds or so. So you're displaying your connectivity to this person in front of many people who are meaningful to you. And that in turn, at least we're theorizing so, can make people internalize their belongingness into this couple. So it's psychologically more salient. You're becoming more committed to your partner.
We're talking now to Catalina Toma from UW-Madison about the growing role of mobile communication and social media in our relationships. And we want to hear from you.
How do you use phone calls, texts, or apps to stay in touch with your significant other? Do you think it makes your relationship better or worse? And do social networks like Facebook affect your relationship? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave us a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation now on the role of mobile communication in relationships, and we want to hear from you.
Yeah, you can give us some data, your personal experiences at 800-642-1234. There's you. There's your significant other, and you're not together. Do you stay in touch? Do you call each other the old-fashioned way? Do you text? Is there an app? Are you Snapchatting each other? Do you follow each other at Twitter and Facebook and keep tabs on what you're up to, let each other know? And does it make your relationship better? Do you feel like you're more connected, more in touch, and you appreciate your significant other maybe a little more, as we found in this research we're talking about? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Talking about her research on this topic is Catalina Toma, Assistant Professor of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. And we were talking about things like when you declare that you're a Facebook couple. I definitely notice when I know someone's in a couple and they always refer to me or my house or my kids, and I know that they're in a couple, and it makes me pause because I think, huh, that's interesting. They're almost differentiating themselves as an individual. Is that maybe a sign of trouble?
Oh, that's, I versus we?
I versus we, yeah.
Okay.
And me and my instead of ours and us.
That's hard to say. I know of research that's showing that couples who use we communication tend to be more satisfied. So the usage of this communication, of this sort of language, more inclusive language, tends to be associated with relational satisfaction. But personally, I wouldn't view it as a problem. At the end of the day, your Facebook profile is still your Facebook profile. And if you intertwine yourself too much with your partner, that might not be psychologically positive after all.
Although I do have seen married couples that have one Facebook profile and you're never quite sure who's liking or commenting on your things.
That seems a little maybe too intertwined. So yeah, probably some benefit to having that separate identity. So we heard, we asked again some of our colleagues how they do this, how they use mobile communication to stay in touch. We heard from Susanna, one of our coworkers on the floor here. She says she and her partner only have dumb phones. They rarely use text. They don't need that kind of constant communication. Now, I wonder, and I know you focus on college students here, if we're going to see a lot of a generational variation where older generations didn't grow up with this stuff, as you were saying earlier, Catalina. They don't feel that need for contact. Younger generations, they're used to it. They do want that.
I think that's absolutely right. There's a generational difference in terms of patterns of technology use, but there's also psychological differences between dating relationships and longer-term marital relationships. In dating relationships, uncertainty tends to be higher, passion tends to be higher, right? The need for connectedness tends to be higher, whereas in longer-term marital relationships, there's more of a pattern of communication that's been established, and the need for constant contact might be significantly decreased.
And we also had another one of our coworkers, Jeffrey, who said he and his wife embraced mobile phones once they had their first daughter, and if it wasn't for having kids, he thinks they might not have had cell phones at all.
That's interesting. I can see how having a child provides a lot of fodder for conversation and many moments that you'd like to share with your partner.
Well, and I also wonder if it's partly logistics and also maybe things that you want to communicate that you don't necessarily want the kids to hear. So maybe you're texting it to each other instead.
That's an excellent point.
There was a range of how much the couples you studied used social media and texting and all that to communicate. What was the high end of the range? Were there outliers that were really on all the time?
There were outliers. The data with respect to texting, at least, was quite skewed. I don't know what the outliers were in particular, but I can tell you that the average number of minutes that the couples reported spending texting with each other was 2 hours, but the data was not distributed in a bell-shaped, in a nice normal distribution. When we took away those outliers, the median value was about 60 minutes. So there were heavy texters, basically. I just don't know what the numbers were.
Okay.
And I wonder, too, we're talking about relationships and satisfaction in relationships. Of course, some relationships are not as healthy as others. And it seems like this ability to be constantly connected can actually feed into possessiveness and jealousy and maybe even abusive behaviors, too. Is there anything that you've seen that shows that this type of immediate communication and expecting immediate response can also have kind of a darker side to it?
That's a really great point. We were not able to look at this in our study, but there's other work on, for instance, attachment styles in mobile communication. And attachment styles refer to the way you view relationships and the pattern of maybe clinginess or avoidance that you demonstrate towards your partner. And at least individuals with a preoccupied attachment style, so those who are constantly worried about not having sufficient connectedness, not being loved enough, and feeling particularly clingy, they do tend to resort to the media quite a bit within relationships, and that can be overwhelming, can be too much. So in this case, the media doesn't cause dissatisfaction, it just allows these individuals with a particular attachment style to manifest themselves, to manifest their unhealthy urges.
We're talking about smartphones, social media, relationships, and connectedness with Catalina Toma. We'll bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Paul joins us in La Crosse. Paul, hi.
Hi. So I met my wife about 10 years ago, and we were communicating through instant messaging. And after a year's time, I moved over. I came over to visit from England, and then, you know, we met face to face, and then after a while, you know, 7 years goes by, we communicate through it's the messaging and through writing and, you know, whether it's emails or whatever. And we learned more about each other through doing that than we think by actually having a face-to-face conversation, because we were forced to. We had no choice. We were about 3,000 miles apart. So, and then after a while, we became, you know, obviously we're friends on Facebook, and then we got married. And now we're still married, but we're friends on Facebook, and she won't release that status symbol because I want to get rid of Facebook, and she won't let me.
That's that marker. And can I ask, you met long distance. If I could ask, what venue, what kind of site, what were you doing online where you met her?
Well, I guess I was studying in school, like when I was about 18, and playing poker online. On the same table, and we were talking through that.
And you took a gamble, Paul. Thank you so much for sharing. Let's say I met online in online poker. A lot of what we're talking about, all in that one story. But at the end there, she wants him to keep that Facebook profile up so that they can advertise that marital status on social media, Catalina.
That's consistent with our data. People mm-hmm. do want to make those public commitments. A wedding ring is a similar concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's go back to the phones, and Kevin is in Gainesville. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Well, my wife and I are well over our mid-40s. In fact, I'm in my 50s. We've been married almost 10 years. We are not on any social media. We text each other, only emergency contacts, because we really want to be able to talk about our day face-to-face at the end of the day.
So you're actually avoiding that kind of connection to make it more meaningful when you do see each other.
Exactly.
Catalina, what would you say about that? Is that partly a generational expectation or preference, maybe?
It could be. I mean, everybody has their own preferences. The data that we're finding is about patterns of groups of individuals, mm-hmm. right? So on average, this is not a common preference. It'd be an outlier, at least if it's part of our data, but to each their own.
So it's interesting because you look at satisfaction. What if one part of the couple is really satisfied with being in touch all the time? That doesn't necessarily mean that the person they're with gets the same level of satisfaction.
That's a really important point. So the availability of these technological tools is really great in many ways, but it also forces people to negotiate aspects of the relationship that they wouldn't otherwise have to negotiate. And sometimes that process of negotiation is easy when partners are on the same page and have the same preferences, but that's not always the case. For instance, it could be that one partner wants to be Facebook official and the other one doesn't, which is something that has to be talked about, and a consensus has to be reached one way or the other. So it is something to think about that perhaps we didn't have to think about before.
Catalina, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Catalina Toma, Assistant Professor of Communication Arts at UW-Madison, talking about the growing role of mobile communication in relationships.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferrat. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.